GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So, not that you need reminding, it's Galway Limerick this weekend in the All-Ireland Hurling Final. And one man we really wanted to talk to is Cyril Farrell. When Farrell was just 30 years of age, he managed Galway to an All-Ireland win against Limerick. And it's great to have him with us. Cyril, thanks so much for joining us. It's brilliant to have you on. So, it was Galway Limerick in 1980 when you were at the helm. And now here we are, 2018. It's Galway Limerick. The years are rolling by.
Oh, stop, flew by, and it just shows how old we're getting. But brings back great memories. Like 1980 was kind of a watershed for Galway hurling, really. Kind of gave us a belief that we could actually win All Ireland. Because up to that, from 1923 to 80 was a long time, and always playing well, but never actually winning. So like it was a big watershed, really.
I think people in my generation don't quite appreciate that, because I was just doing some reading there. Galway had contested 9 finals from 23 through until 1980. Like, there was almost a parallel with the Mayo footballers going on.
Yeah, they had this very same, would you believe, Joe, because like you had this thing about a special course being on and this sort of stuff. Like, and the longer it went on, of course, the more the course was getting bigger, and it was getting harder and harder. It was hard enough to shake off things like that, and you know, which was great to do then. Like, and like it kind of opened up the floodgates, really, because since that, really, even though we haven't won that many senior All-Irelands, we've been kind of knocking around between under 21 minors a whole lot. Like, you know, like in 83, we won our first minor, which is another. Since that, won a lot of them. But again, it was just hard to make the breakthrough. And once you make the breakthrough, it gets that bit easier.
I didn't realise there was talk of a curse. What was the genesis of that curse?
I don't know. Was it about some team not going to mass or something on a Sunday morning? Like that time, all the teams would go to mass. You know, that was the ritual. But for some team in the past, I think. But we weren't believing it. But at the same time, you had older people saying, oh, the curse is still on you, this sort of stuff. So it was important to break it.
I figured a funeral or mass would have been involved somewhere along the line. That tends to be the way.
Yeah, well, that time, Joe, everyone went to mass, like things in chairs, and even my time, like it was always understood the morning of the game, whether you believed in God or not, mass was part of the ritual. That's what you did, and everyone had to go. That was part of the early part of the training, as well, it was just part of the regime, and everyone did it.
And where would you go to mass on the morning of the final?
Usually, like, we'd travel on the Saturday evening, and we'd stay in the hotel on the Saturday night. We'd have a priest with us at say mass, say around 9:30. Up around 8:15, you'd have breakfast, and did you have mass, and then we used to go either to Black Rock College, which we leave for a knock around, or the Phoenix Park, and then you're back in for a couple of teams. Like, you'd have a kind of all time and schedule, like, you know, the boys liked the routine they were used to, like, and that was that's what we never travelled up in the morning. That's another roads are completely different, Joe. Like, yeah. It was a long trip from Galway up, so we just afraid anything could happen on the way up to Sunday morning. So that was the ritual, and we all look forward to it. I loved it that way, because you had everyone under your tongue there and then, like, whereas you meet in the morning, it's kind of everything has to go very smooth. Like, with the night before, we'd have a meeting, and they'd be used to that schedule, used to that setup.
Yeah, and a wink and a nod to the priest not to go on too long.
Well, he wouldn't. He'd be partied, he'd know the hurling scene, and you know, just usually Father McNamara, someone that was involved in the minor level in that. With all the Father John Nocton, with all the people that had known the scene, and it'd be a nice, a special mass, a nifty mass, not too long.
What always struck me was, well, like, priests and God have to be fair about these things. So, like, he can't pray for Galway to win.
No, but like, we'd be hoping that we'd get a lucky break. He couldn't pray for now, but like, I would always feel like, and still do that, if I, you know, I'd still believe mass is a good feel, like, in the sense that you're giving up an hour of your week, it isn't fully an hour, but to me, like, it sets you up for the day, and I'd always believe after it feel much better. Mm. Like, that might be just kind of a thing in your head, but it's when you believe it, it's fine, like, you know what I mean, and we'd always go to play the game to the best. We'd always say, look, play to the best of our ability, and the best team may win. So you'd be hoping the best team. But if not, look, we lost a lot as well. We have to take it in the team. That's part of sport.
Yeah. I mean, I guess even if you're not a believer, just sitting still for half an hour and almost catching yourself a little bit is not the worst way to spend a bit of time on the
morning. No. But I would make sure that the lads that I don't believe it, I'd get them plenty to do mass. They might have to do a reading or something. I'd occupy their time. I'd have it worked out with the priest, like, you know.
Oh, would you really? So some of the players that get up and do a reading?
Oh, they would, yeah. No problem, yeah. As again, to be part of, you know, yeah, to do what you'd ask them to do, it'd be no problem that way.
Right, very interesting. So I guess, look, so the kind of Mayo parallels are there leading up to...
Definitely, the Mayo parallels often even remind looking at. I would love to see them win it, but like all along with this, that great team, the last few years, like very much parallel with Galway. We've kind of always been near, great, fantastic supporters, getting near and near and just could never get over the line. And I know in my time in 1980, it was much a mental thing as we had the scale of ability, which is just to change the mindset, really, that you're good enough to do it. That was the big thing.
So people, I'm sure, know this at this stage. This is a well-worn tale. But you managed the Galway minors at 23 years of age. You got to a final. You won with the Galway under-21s at the age of 28. And then you were actually Babs Keating's assistant in 79. He was over the Galway seniors, age 29 at that stage you were, when they got to a final. So, I mean, you've had a huge success underage at a very young age. What was your hurling playing career like? Were you any good or no interest?
Just an ordinary club hurler, I suppose, really. Kind of, you know, really enjoyed it. And I suppose I went to college in UCG, and that kind of changed it, because there, you know, they became captain of the senior team. That time the captain would do all of the training and coaching and organising everything. And he'd be playing with Trip lads, Kilkenny lads, Cork lads. And you found like that. So it opened your eyes that while they were very good, they were no different to you or me. They had a pair of hands, a pair of wrists, they trained a lot. But the big difference was they had a different jersey on. And why we'd always look at, say, Tip, Cork, Kilkenny, especially winning all that, and begin to realise, hey, what's different? There's nothing different. You're as good as them, but just to get the belief into everyone. And it kind of changed my mindset, really. And definitely meeting them, hurling with all these guys and hurling against these guys in Fitzgibbon. See, a lot of, they're all nearly county fellas. So, like, it was a great eye-opener. And made me believe like, that lads in Galway were as good as anyone, you know.
Mm. And what was it like working under Babs? What did you learn from him?
Oh, actually, he was a fantastic coach. He was a great coach. He had won. He was coming from a winning background. Tip would be completely different to Galway. Like, they would believe the whole thing that every year is the right to win. And he was a great character, great coach, great time with him, like, you know. And sure, afterwards, then he wound up, he was over Tip when I was facing him. And sure, like, we'd be fighting like hell on the sideline, but we still remain great friends.
So when Babs moves on after 79, Galway had been beaten in an All-Ireland final, Babs moves on, and someone says to you, here, do you want the job? You're 30 years of age. Do you jump at it? Is it a complete no-brainer that you're going to take this
job?
Well,
you know, the funny thing is I was a teacher in St. Joey's, CBS Fairview, Joey's used to call it. And I got a phone call on a Tuesday morning after a Monday night meeting, and I was asked would I take manager. And so, like, I just jumped at it, not thinking at all of the logistics of it going up and down. That time, George, was Tuesday and Thursday. Right. Leave school at quarter past 4, back around 2:30 in the morning. Never thought at all of changing the trails from Thursday to Friday. I'd be going on Friday evening anyway. You still choose the Thursday and the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. That was the ritual. But if you jumped out, you were young and you were ambitious. Like, it never dawned on me about the travelling. Mm. It was only when you stopped doing it that you realised, gee, this is mad. Now, early on, the first year or two, I had fellas from Dublin going up and down with me, let go of it. But then they all got transferred back, and I was still in Dublin at the time. So, like, it was an easier stint the second time around when you were based in Loughrea.
Yeah. The roads in 79 weren't, or 1980 weren't
what
they are now.
Oh, like, you go through, how would you say, Milltown Pass, Turtle Pass, Rotter Bridge, Moat, Kilbeggan, Kinnegad, all in Christ. Used to take hours. Like, it was a job to go up and down, you know, it itself, you know.
Did you find that, like, so if I'm in the car now, I turn on the radio, or else I listen to a podcast. That's a lot of time on your own, in your own head, up and down in the car. Did you enjoy it? Was it a pain?
Well, a lot of time I had to fellas like, if a day left in when I would be doing it, I'd have music on more than anything, but I'd be thinking of game plans and little combinations and permutations put together. You'd have it all in your head.
Yeah.
Even going into training, like, we'd have to say, not right, and then maybe once every 2 weeks, have 2:15s, but I'd have that in my head before I go, because you'd have plenty of time to be thinking about it. You know what I mean? Even for the weekend, you'd have it in your head the whole time, because it was a lot of time. It was definitely 6 or 7 hours driving, and you're, like, thinking about not only Ireland, that's what you're doing.
This is a difficult question, because nobody wants to talk about themselves in, you know, and self-praise is no praise, but clearly looking at what you had achieved at a young age in your 20s, it was very impressive, and then to go in and lead them to an All-Ireland final in 1980 is very impressive as well. Like, what was your strength? Like, were you seen as a new breed of tactician that, you know, was kind of coming through, or was it motivation, or what do you think it was that you were bringing to the party?
Well, first of all, I'd make the lads believe that they were good enough, and I'd make them feel that they were the fittest team in the country. Now, they may not have been the fittest team, but I'd make them believe that they were the fittest team. And my training would be kind of different and more. Like that time, Joe, we do a block of training, maybe 3 weeks at a time, full blast, no break, and maybe two or three nights off. Then full blast again. We do morning sessions, maybe a little bit ahead of our time. But like, I just to give us an edge, I believed we had to be the fittest. You know, get them to really believe. We always believed we had the hurlers, and we always had courses or hard luck stories. And I'd be asking, look, if we're not good enough, we didn't win. That's it. So like, we get to this level, and we will win. Now it's easy to say that. And after, you know, people say we should have won a lot more. But the funny thing is, Joe, the ones we won, we could have lost, and the ones we lost, we could have won. It's high. Yeah, at that level, like, it's the small little margins, and you need everyone fit. That can happen. But like, it kind of goes on a roller coaster when you get a team, when you get a team kind of going there. And like in the mid-80s, we got a team together with the minors, kind of under-21s, one minor on 83, one an under-21 in 86. All these guys are coming through onto an older team. So you're there for 5 or 6 years kind of battling at the top. And you get your cycles and it goes on.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think it was going to take as long for Galway to win again because we still kept producing young players. But it just shows how hard it is to win. And the fantastic last year that the group of players that's there now, and we all don't know, that they, what was it, nearly 30 years, 29, 30 years, that they finally broke that, we'll call it a kind of a hoodoo, because the longer it goes on, people be saying, they're questioning, like, will they ever going to do it, or are they ever going to push on again?
Yeah.
When you do it, then, like, it gives that, it gives the whole county, it isn't just, it gives the county life, everything, kind of in life generally, because, like, you know, you go into a hospital, say to young kids, they're thrilled to see the cup, the salad, the older people are thrilled as well. All these, you don't think of these when you're playing, but afterwards when you win and visit them with the cup, then it hits you, like, that there's more to, like, the hurling is bigger than people think. I know there's more to life than hurling, but at the same time, hurling can give a lift to people that you don't even, you know, that can't see the game, they can't go to shout John, but like genuinely love it.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And like people obviously still are watching you in the Sunday game and you're seeing the game as shrewdly as ever. Back in 1980, were you coming up with anything particularly new? Like tactically, was that stuff going on or was it a kind of go out and play?
Yeah, well, like we would almost have kind of just would developed a kind of a hand pass. Now they took it out of the game, and so it was halfway through our reign towards the end that you couldn't score a hand pass. We had that kind of developed. We'd often try a three-man midfield. We'd do little things different. We'd try things. Like, could be hard to change the other players at times because we're so used to playing, say, straight up. Younger guys are more open to it.
Yeah.
Now, like, you have a lot of that going on. But, Joe, it doesn't matter what game plan you use. You kind of use a game plan to suit the players you have. That's really what happens, you know.
And that's the
big end of it, that you have to suit, kind of, could you make your suit that suits the cloth. And that's why your fellas, say, playing sweepers at the moment on different combinations, they mightn't trust their full backline, or, you know, mightn't trust the half backline fully, have a sweeper in behind them. But that sweeper, like, is like a quarterback in American football, because, like, you have to pin the ball in when you get it, say, to lads midfield, and two midfielders won't work, you have to have three or four. Do that is slowly, but then you're short up front. So,
yeah.
Like, if you're not scoring enough, the old traditions will be against it because there's lads missing up front. But if you have a setup that's not good enough to hold out at the back, you're staying in the game longer and you're still in the game. But, like, it takes a good bit, like, you know, to do that. I suppose the one that did win would be Davy Fitz, I suppose, really, in 2013 with player He. Wouldn't all Ireland playing kind of, you know, playing sweepers kind of coming from the back and different formations. You know, Derek McGrath did it as well but didn't win. So you'd be asking to go back to the old style. But you do these things to suit yourself, really. That's what you have to do, like, you know.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Cyril Farrell for obvious reasons. There's the game on Sunday, and back in 1980 it was Galway and Limerick again when Cyril was manager of Galway. How did the Galway players, I suppose, particularly the elder ones, how did they receive 30-year-old Cyril Farrell coming in telling them he was in charge?
Yeah, well, it's I'd be the victim because these guys, some of them are nearly as old as me, but they'd be 10 times, like, they'd have more hurling in one finger than I'd have 10. You know what I mean? That was the big thing. But I just, well, I said to them, look, we all have one thing in common. And none of us have a senior All-Ireland, like, you know. So I kind of said, it doesn't matter who you are, All-Star or anything else, we'd have played to them. It doesn't really matter. I said, you haven't what we want and what Galway people want. So, like...
Did they buy into that?
Oh, yeah, they did, yeah. That was the big thing, yeah. Well, they had to buy into it, really, but we wanted them to buy into it because if it didn't, we were in trouble. You know, like, they hadn't won. They were mad to win, and that was the big thing. They were hungry to win, like, you know.
Yeah. I was reading about some of your methods, including cold showers.
Well, that was the start.
That's old school.
Well, I wanted to, I was kind of changing their attitude. I would say it's going to be different. So their first retraining session was the 6th of January. In 1980, and it was against UCG, kind of a challenge game. You had contacts there at the time, and afterwards, in Cardmore, the ground was very wet, so we did a physical session and made sure that we were covered in wet and muck and everything else, and into the showers in afterwards, and it was no tea, no anything. And the grounds went all I want is cold water. So they were shouting, where's the little baldy effer? I was gone, you know what I mean? Just to make them see that was going to be a change. We trained very hard, made it, like, you know, to get that just from the very start. Lost a lot of league games early on, but I was trying out lads and trying out things, but I knew if I could get them really believing. The harder you train, the more you believe, and the harder you train, like, you know, the luckier you get, really. I kept driving this in that it'll be our year, and eventually it came right, like, you know.
Yeah. Where's the baldy effort? You were baldy at 30, were you?
I was nearly bald, yeah. Like, it was getting very light, and they were calling me that anyway. They were happy to flick your hair back, but they were looking for me because they figured, like, that I'd pulled the faster. I disappeared. And I had a traction. I wasn't booking wet. They were covered in muck.
To fast forward, I mean, amazing stuff. So, I mean, you beat Offaly in the semi-final, and then it's the final against Limerick. Why, like,
So that, you know, that Limerick team had lots of great players. I think Eamon Cregan was the top scorer that year, and yeah. I think he had a great final. They were a good team, obviously.
Oh, they were a very, very strong physical team. Like up front, you had Joe McKenna, Eamon Cregan, Grimes, Ollie O'Connor, these guys, Paddy Fitzmaurice, they were very good up front. You had the Carrolls at the back, you had, you know, Sean Foley, you know, Liam O'Donoghue. You know, these were good hurlers. Leonard Enright, full back. Quaid and Gomez, they were a top team, had won a couple of Munster titles, very physical, very different type of hurling. But like we'd been there, it was a big plus being there in 79. Mm. You know, and we'd lost, which is, you get that hunger. There's a terrible pain when you lose, like it takes months to go. It doesn't really go away until you get back out again and get back in there, you know.
And how did the game go? In the end, it was 2-15 to 3-9, so 21 points to 18. Was it close, or were you pulling away from them?
We got a very good start. We had a full forward and we put John Connolly, who would have been always a central field, centre back, put him on full forward, and we had two very good corner forwards, kind of knew at the time, Bernie Ford and Noel Lane. And our policy was to get indirect to these guys and kind of swing the ball out to the corners of Ford and Lane, because they'd be good to swing around you rather than cut through it, they'd come around on the outside and kind of have a score. Like, they were good at that. We had a great start, and like Limerick were playing catch up, but like typical Limerick, they came back into it, you know. Cregan got a great goal, and they were finishing strong. But Joe McKinnon was a big target that time. We usually get a couple of goals. We had, most people would think we were playing Conor Hayes on the youngest time full back, but he'd been missing for a lot of the summer, so we put him in cornerback and had played Niall McInerney, who'd be very good at mime kind of games. He'd be talking to you and kind of at you the whole time, not hitting you, but trying to talk and teasing you. Like, and he'd know Joe McKinnon well, and he had a right tussle with him, like, you know. Had a big part to play in keeping him quiet, because he was very hard to keep quiet. He still wound up getting the goal to the points, but like his goal at that time, Joe, would be worth more than 3 points to Limerick. It drives them more, you know.
Yeah. When the final whistle goes, to do that at 30 is just an unbelievable thing. I can only imagine, really. You must kind of pinch yourself when you look back and think, how did I do that at 30 years of age? Were your parents still alive? Were your family in the crowd? Who were the people around you at that time in your life?
Well, my father had been killed in an accident in 78. My mother was still around. But the age didn't come into it, Joe. Like, you were taking a job to do and you kind of consumed in it. You know what I mean? The age never entered my head. There's only a look back and at these guys who were older than me, and would be way better orders, but just never come into it. And maybe it was kind of a carefree attitude, really. Like, you know, the training, it was no stopping training. Like, you could be doing 4 nights. The summertime, like, it was up and up and up, and we kept up in it all the time. I remember one night when my sleep at the time, a fellow called Inky Flaherty, be a legend in the game in Galway. He said, "Sir, you're going to kill them." I said, "You couldn't kill these, Inky. Don't worry, they'll die, but they'll come up out of the ground again. They'll be all right." Like, he would have never seen that kind of, maybe kind of over the heat training, but like, I just wanted to drive them to the limit, like, and it was worth it in. But they needed that, because they were kind of around a good while. They had lost a lot, competed a lot, and just to make them feel that, geez, we can't do any more. This has to be our year.
Yeah. Did your mother go up to the game?
No. She'd be at home in the village in Woodford, and she'd have music going and maybe saying a few prayers as well. And she would be one then. They'd go down to the local, she wouldn't drink, but they'd go down to the local pub and they'd have a sing song. Music would be the big thing. They'd have a sing song all night. That's the way it went.
Right. And did your brothers or sisters or?
Oh, yeah. They would be at the game. Yeah. And sure, they'd be thrilled for you, like. But, you know, you wouldn't really meet them maybe afterwards and then be gone to tea. But it was, the age thing never really came into it until you looked at back to afterwards, but not while you were doing it.
Yeah. So were you just a mature 30-year-old in hindsight when you look back?
Well, I don't know, was it mature or was it immature or was I mad? Probably mad when you look back, Joe, because like the travelling, like, you know, jeepers when you think of it, like, you know, it was, but doing it, you kind of did and didn't know the difference. You know, it was, but I don't know what you do. Like now, of course, the roads are different, and even travelling now on the Sunday, they're all up on the Sunday morning by bus. Everything is very scheduled, and like it's a different world, really.
And
you know?
when you get back to Galway then, or like when you see your mum, or when you see the effect it's had in the place, what are your memories of that?
Ah, fantastic. Like the whole village went, the whole county went mad, because like it's just 57 years, but the village at home, be a small village, Joe, wherever I know everyone's door would be open. It's that kind of village, just a small little place.
What's it called, Cyril?
Woodford. East Galway, a small little village in between Loch Ray and Bertram, on Loch Derby and the Shannon near enough to, but like the whole county went mad, but the village went mad. Like, you know, they had never seen anything like, well, maybe an odd old person, but there was no one there, and it was fantastic, you know. It was was a buzz around for the winter, like there's so many nights. I'm sure everything was, it brings happiness outside of Ireland. That's the big thing. You can see smile on people's faces.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different Ireland that time, but no one minded when you, like, when you win, all the kind of worries are knocked, they're put on the back burner.
When you say it was a different Ireland then?
Well, that time, like, you didn't have any mobile phones and there was no social media, that, like, you know, it was a different, and the phone would ring at home and mother would answer the phone. She would nearly do the secretary, if it was me. Like, she'd take the, if I wasn't there, she'd take the calls and be a lot of the local papers ringing and that sort of stuff, and you ring back. But, like, you know, it was a different, even the, we'll say the dietitians now, old time Joe, used to use the Mart restaurant in Athenry, and the guy over the restaurant would come down, he'd see them training. Now, if it was physical training, they wouldn't be able to eat much. If it was just a match, they'd be willing to eat, and they'd have a choice of steak, a chicken, or fish, as much chips or potatoes as they like, drink as many pints of milk as they like, and going home, they'd have 7-Up or Coke going home, and a pocket full of club milks. Like, you wouldn't be doing that now, like, you know, it's a different ballgame.
Isn't pocket full of club milks does no harm, in fairness.
Yeah, well, like, you know, that's the way it was. These guys were all, they were doing physical work the following day, like, so that's what they were at, like, you know.
1980 between Galway and Limerick is famous for one other thing, I suppose, and it's the speech, the Connolly speech, which is just kind of an amazing moment. Just to jog people's memory, here is the great Joe Connolly.
Is it a line now? Levema or Galevach? Tadini Resh and Galle, Agatha Glinder and the Grill, Afresh and Kaimans Kimino Dini, Sasna, America, or Put the Cheetah, Agatha should be to the Queen in his love. Just like the Ekusuras, while I'm Boyachis. A row on the iron limb, a shock on trip at Eintach, a hug she's doing in you. I could spoil him at our son, Trish Kirchenish, a horse Golemna. Hip hip! Hip hip! Hip hip! People of Galway, we love you!
People of Galway, we love you! He heard it somewhere before.
Amazing moment. I mean, obviously the Pope had just been, so I guess that's in everyone's mind. Did that occur to you at the time? Jesus, this is some speech.
It didn't at the time, but you see, the Connollys, that was Joe there saying, they would be native Irish speakers. Their parents left for Connemara. And like, Joe was in college in my time at UCG, and his mother used to make us big brown cakes. I mean big ones, not big small ones. They'd like a wheat bar, and we'd be tucking into it. But like, native Irish speaker would flow out of him, and then no, that speech would just come off the cuff, like that'd be in his heart. Like, with the Connollys, all you had to do was put on the jersey, because these guys would believe, you had no problem with these guys. Once they go out there, they believe you're good enough to win. And so after that, you had the late Joe McDonald in singing The West Awake, and the whole thing kind of took on off on its own. Like, to be hard, you know, to be hard to replicate it, really, like that win and that kind of euphoria.
Yeah, you mentioned Joe McDonagh, and that was an amazing moment as well. Like, we grabbed that clip just because people mightn't. I mean, Joe Connolly's speech is so famous, people might have forgotten McDonagh. So basically, we have people of Galway, we love you, and that great moment. And then Joe McDonagh grabs the mic and off he goes.
When Galway lies in slumber deep.
Powerful stuff when you hear everybody singing with them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unreal. Like, he was a great character, brilliant, like a brilliant mind, a brilliant fella. Died before his time, but again, was in college in my time. A lot of these guys were in college together, and like, you couldn't plan that. That just happened off the cuff. McDonagh would be able to kind of, he'd be able to talk in Irish or English or Welsh. He had that, you know, he was a Celtic honours degree student. He had that kind of ability, Joe. He was just different in every way, really, like, you know.
Yeah, they do seem like a great bunch, like, of men. Like, a lot of intelligent, very sharp minds in that group.
Yeah, you know, like, the lads that hadn't won much, but, like, they appreciated that one. Like, I suppose, like, to win one is the thing, really. Like, if you had 20, like, I remember that at Tony Keady's funeral, and Bobby Ryan said to me, He said, sir, does it matter whether you win 1 or 20, or does it matter even if you win at all? Mm. He said, it's all about taking part. Now, I know when you're taking part, you want to win. That's what you're there for. And you have to take the defeats as well. But like moments like that, you're going to replicate and they live long in the memory.
Yeah, and even Connolly's People of Galway, We Love You. Like, it was such a little wink and a smile. And you know what I mean? Like, it was a very funny kind of a moment. So I presume you had good fun away from the pitch.
Oh yeah, sure. He'd be a road wheel. But see, the Pope came to Ballybrit, and the Connolly's home house is opposite Ballybrit. It's about just across the road, about maybe 50 yards, and they would be immersed in that. Like, and sure. Look at you. It was an iconic moment, really. Like, and again, no matter what you win, like, I don't think anything will ever be like it, really.
Yeah. How do you see this Sunday going, Cyril?
Well, like, look, it's a unique final in the sense that Limerick have come out of the blue. I kind of tipped them in the early in the year as kind of the dark horses. They're playing lovely hurling. I saw them in the kind of the Munster League or the Waterford Crystal, whatever they call it, and they were developing this style of kind of clipping the ball 30-yard passes from cornerback to wingback, getting the midfield and then crisscrossing the ball, giving great space for the forwards into space, and the forwards are fast. But like Galway are very experienced at this stage. Most of these guys have played in, between replays and all, have played in 5 All-Ireland finals in the last few years. Experience, and yet they haven't put 70 minutes fully together. I expect them on Sunday, if they put that 70 minutes together on Sunday, they'll be very extremely hard to beat, because they have great ability. Like, and it's kind of their golden era if they can build on it. Like, a lot of that's coming through this, like, you know, kind of make hay with the sunshine. They're good enough to put it back to back.
Yeah, it's funny because all year they've almost been talked about as sort of unbeatable, or like they, you know, the champions in waiting, and then against Clare, I guess it was almost odd to see them looking so vulnerable. It's been a while since we've seen that from them.
Yeah, and they've had a great start, and the same against Kilkenny, and kind of holding on. But I expect, like, it's been a long year, a lot of matches, and they've toured the county, they've kind of served the public well with the cup and going places, which you have to do. But I just feel the 2 weeks will get them back on Keane again. I expect Gareth McInerney probably to come back into the team if he's fit. I think he will be fit for the next game. You know, they'll be kind of going from, they'll be picking from strength, which is a plus, because it's more than a 15-man game now. You're going to have at least 18, three guys going on, if not more, and they'll be needed. Like, now Limerick will do the same, but I think it's still in Galway's hands, like, you know.
Yeah. Listen, we've taken up plenty of your time. I very much appreciate it, Cyril. Thanks so much.
No problem.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.